Chapter 49. Nothing harsher repulsive the noiseless city was flooded with the mellowest light that ever streamed from the moon, and seemed like some living creature wrapped in peaceful slumber. On its further side was a little temple, whose delicate pillars and ornate front glowed with a rich luster that chained the eye like a spell. And nearby, the palace of the king reared its creamy walls out of the midst of a great garden of shrubbery that was flecked all over with a random shower of amber lights, a spray of golden sparks that lost their brightness in the glory of the moon and glinted softly upon the sea of dark foliage like the pallid stars of the Milky Way. Overhead the stately columns, majestic still in their ruin, underfoot the dreaming city, in the distance the silver sea, not on the broad earth is there another picture half so beautiful. As we turned and moved again through the temple, I wished that the illustrious men who had sat in it in the remote ages could visit it again, and reveal themselves to our curious eyes: Plato, Aristotle, Demosthenes, Socrates, Phocion, Pythagoras, Euclid, Pindar, Xenophon, Herodotus, Praxiteles, and Phidias, Zeuxis the painter. What a constellation of celebrated names! But more than all, I wished that old Diogenes, groping so patiently with his lantern, searching so zealously for one solitary honest man in all the world, might meander along and stumble on our party. I ought not to say it, maybe, but still I suppose he would have put out his light. We left the Parthenon, to keep its watch over old Athens, as it had kept it for 2300 years, and went and stood outside the walls of the citadel. In the distance was the ancient, but still almost perfect temple of Theseus, and close by, looking to the west, was the bema, from whence Demosthenes thundered his philippics, and fired the wavering patriotism of his countrymen. To the right was Mars Hill, where the Areopagus sat in ancient times, and where St. Paul defined his position, and below was the marketplace, where he disputed daily with the gossip-loving Athenians. We climbed the stone steps St. Paul ascended, and stood in the square-cut place he stood in, and tried to recollect the Bible account of the matter, but for certain reasons, I could not recall the words. I have found them since. While Paul waited for them at Athens, his spirit was stirred in him, when he saw the city wholly given up to idolatry. Herefore disputed he in the synagogue with the Jews, and with the devout persons, and in the market daily with them that met with him. And they took him, and brought him unto Areopagus, saying, May we know what this new doctrine whereof thou speakest is? Then Paul stood in the midst of Mars Hill, and said, Ye men of Athens, I perceive that in all things ye are too superstitious. For as I passed by, and beheld your devotions, I found an altar with this inscription: To the unknown God. Whom, therefore, ye ignorantly worship, him declare I unto you. Acts, ch. Zvi. It occurred to us, after a while, that if we wanted to get home before daylight betrayed us, we had better be moving. So we hurried away. When far on our road, we had a parting view of the Parthenon, with the moonlight streaming through its open colonnades and touching its capitals with silver. As it looked then, solemn, grand, and beautiful it will always remain in our memories. As we marched along, we began to get over our fears, and ceased to care much about quarantine scouts or anybody else. We grew bold and reckless, and once, in a sudden burst of courage, I even threw a stone at a dog. It was a pleasant reflection, though, that I did not hit him, because his master might just possibly have been a policeman. Inspired by this happy failure, my valor became utterly uncontrollable, and at intervals I absolutely whistled, though on a moderate key. But boldness breeds boldness, and shortly I plunged into a vineyard, in the full light of the moon, and captured a gallon of superb grapes, not even minding the presence of a peasant who rode by on a mule. Denny and Birch followed my example. Now I had grapes enough for a dozen. But then Jackson was all swollen up with courage too, and he was obliged to enter a vineyard presently. The first bunch he seized brought trouble. A frowsy, bearded brigand sprang into the road with a shout, and flourished a musket in the light of the moon. We sidled toward the Piraeus, not running, you understand, but only advancing with celerity. The brigand shouted again, but still we advanced. It was getting late, and we had no time to fool away on every ass that wanted to drivel Greek platitudes to us. We would just as soon have talked with him as not if we had not been in a hurry. Presently Denny said, "Those fellows are following us." We turned, and, sure enough, there they were, three fantastic pirates armed with guns. We slackened our pace to let them come up, and in the meantime I got out my cargo of grapes and dropped them firmly but reluctantly into the shadows by the wayside. But I was not afraid. I only felt that it was not right to steal grapes. And all the more so when the owner was around, and not only around, but with his friends around also. The villains came up and searched a bundle Dr. Birch had in his hand, and scowled upon him when they found it had nothing in it but some holy rocks from Mars Hill, and these were not contraband. They evidently suspected him of playing some wretched fraud upon them, and seemed half inclined to scalp the party. But finally they dismissed us with a warning, couched in excellent Greek, I suppose, and dropped tranquilly in our wake. When they had gone 300 yards they stopped, and we went on rejoiced. But behold, another armed rascal came out of the shadows, and took their place, and followed us 200 yards. Then he delivered us over to another miscreant, who emerged from some mysterious place, and he in turn to another. For a mile and a half our rear was guarded all the while by armed men. I never traveled in so much state before in all my life. It was a good while after that before we ventured to steal any more grapes, and when we did we stirred up another troublesome brigand, and then we ceased all further speculation in that line. I suppose that fellow that rode by on the mule posted all the sentinels from Athens to the Piraeus about us. Every field on that long route was watched by an armed sentinel, some of whom had fallen asleep, no doubt, but were on hand, nevertheless. This shows what sort of a country modern Attica is, a community of questionable characters. These men were not there to guard their possessions against strangers, but against each other, for strangers seldom visit Athens and the Piraeus, and when they do, they go in daylight, and can buy all the grapes they want for a trifle. The modern inhabitants are confiscators and falsifiers of high repute, if gossip speaks truly concerning them, and I freely believe it does. Just as the earliest tinges of the dawn flushed the eastern sky and turned the pillared Parthenon to a broken harp hung in the pearly horizon, we closed our 13th mile of weary, roundabout marching, and emerged upon the seashore abreast the ships, with our usual escort of 1,500 Pyrian dogs howling at our heels. We hailed a boat that was 200 or 300 yards from shore, and discovered in a moment that it was a police boat on the lookout for any quarantine-breakers that might chance to be abroad. So we dodged. We were used to that by this time, and when the scouts reached the spot we had so lately occupied, we were absent. They cruised along the shore, but in the wrong direction, and shortly our own boat issued from the gloom and took us aboard. They had heard our signal on the ship. We rowed noiselessly away, and before the police boat came in sight again, we were safe at home once more. 4 more of our passengers were anxious to visit Athens, and started half an hour after we returned. But they had not been ashore 5 minutes till the police discovered, and chased them so hotly, that they barely escaped to their boat again, and that was all. They pursued the enterprise no further. We set sail for Constantinople today, but some of us little care for that. We have seen all there was to see in the old city, that had its birth 1600 years before Christ was born, and was an old town before the foundations of Troy were laid, and saw it in its most attractive aspect. Wherefore, why should we worry? 2 other passengers ran the blockade successfully last night. So we learned this morning. They slipped away so quietly that they were not missed from the ship for several hours. They had the hardihood to march into the Piraeus in the early dusk and hire a carriage. They ran some danger of adding 2 or 3 months' imprisonment to the other novelties of their Holy Land pleasure excursion. I admire Pete. Quotation from the Pilgrims. But they went and came safely, and never walked a step. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.